97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Good morning to you. It feels like we've decided it feels like Friday the 13th, even though it's the 12th day of December. Because I walked in the door this morning. By the way, welcome into the Mark Cox Morning Show. I walked in the door this morning, Kim, and my laptop has malfunctioned. And at 4 in the morning, there is no technical help in the building. And that's going to happen during business hours starting about 8 a.m., I imagine. So normally where I would be able to come in and edit some audio for the show, my hands were tied this morning. Nothing I could do. And, of course, I don't have the technical expertise to figure out what's going on with the input. So I didn't change anything.
Sounds more like a Monday than a Friday.
It does. And then Ethan tells me several of the computers were wonky this morning. Is that the term you used?
That's a great term.
Wonky.
I couldn't access drives. There were websites missing videos and stuff. Like, none of this is working this morning.
It is a wonky Friday morning, and you know, some of you are waking up with some snow on the ground. I have a friend who actually met me to watch the Mammoth concert down in the valley, Greg, who lives north of Alton, and he was reporting several hours ago that he already had snow accumulating on his grass and driveway up there.
Oh, wow. Does MoDOT know?
Well, that's IDOT.
Well, I know, but
IDOT, MoDOT, someone call them and tell them.
IDOT probably was on the ball, but they should have hopefully given MoDOT a little heads up that there might have been some weather last night. Because I would imagine it came down on a line just to the north of St. Louis. So there had to be parts of Missouri, maybe up around Bowling Green or somewhere north of there that would have been impacted as well.
But we do have some potentially coming in over the weekend, too.
I did hear that.
And they say, not much, but we have to know that not much can cause a lot of issues.
I wonder if they have any overtime shifts scheduled at MoDOT this weekend. I don't know. I wouldn't hold my breath if I were you. Had the big Odyssey, I was about to say 97.1, the big Odyssey Christmas party last night for our station group. And, of course, Kim and Ethan were no shows. So I had to go and represent the program myself in front of the crowd.
Way to go.
What were you two losers doing last night?
I am not feeling the best.
I'm sorry to hear that.
I told Kim I went home last night. I was not feeling good. And at noon, I fell asleep and I woke up at 6 o'clock last
night. Wow. Okay. Well, you have a good excuse then, Kim.
Well, here, let's guilt trip him. So yours is that you're sick. That's legitimate. Mine was that I was caring for my children.
I mean, you don't have to do that.
Well, that's true. I think that my almost 4 month old, he's probably ready to be home by himself.
I think he can do it.
I think he's ready.
I think he's ready already. we had a nice get together, a little pop up bar down at, Ballpark Village in one of the restaurant bar areas down there, and it was well done.
I heard
fairly well attended. Some good food. The food was delicious.
I heard karaoke was part of that. Were you singing some Sammy Hagar?
I did not. I was not asked, and I did not perform. Our station manager, our boss Becky, did a little 12 Days of Christmas kind of knockoff story, but it was fun.
I think the song people choose for karaoke can say a lot about them.
It wasn't really karaoke. She wrote the lyrics herself to 12 Days of Christmas and then kind of performed it for us with Alex Rich, who's one of our account managers, and you hear him on the Reardon Show on occasion, and he was playing some background music for her. So that was about it.
You could have played the guitar, Mark, know how.
I can play some chords, but I wouldn't know what order
early
to put
today,
them in.
Mark.
It's going to get ugly. It's going to get ugly. No more stars' names being mispronounced today, I promise. For sure. I was thinking grief about that at the Christmas party, in fact, last night.
I'm so glad people listened to the Mark Cox
Morning
Show
here at
Odyssey.
Because what else are they going to do, really? A couple of developments overnight, if you weren't paying attention. Number one, apparently I made a horrific mistake in supporting anything to do with the Indiana Hoosiers, because they, too, have a legislature riddled with rhinos who last night failed to vote in the affirmative to redistrict two areas that would have added two Republican seats to Congress. basically it was a up yours to Donald Trump. And I don't know what the hell they were thinking. But that's what happened. They're just weak-kneed, weak people who didn't have the guts to stand up and do it when you know absolutely, positively, had the Democrats been in charge, they would have done it. They always do what is in their best interest politically, and Republicans don't. They have power. They have the majority in the House and the Senate in Indiana, and they refuse to move that bill forward. So we will have to deal with the fallout of that. And, of course, in a few minutes here, we'll talk about the situation in the state of Missouri. You know, a bunch of do-gooders, basically liberal progressives who take advantage of the initiative petition process in the state of Missouri and getting things on the ballot because it's so easy. All you have to do is buy your way onto the ballot. Get a couple million dollars worth of out-of-state interest money, and you can hire people, even from out-of-state, to come in here and collect petitions until you get something on the ballot. And they're trying to do that with the redistricting in Missouri. So everywhere you look, you see the hands of the left sticking their hands into the gears trying to screw things up because they've gerrymandered for 40 years. All of their big blue states, as much they've wrung as much as they can out of most of them. And they're angry that the Republicans contemplated doing the same thing, but they knew in the end many of them wouldn't have the guts to do it. Now, Missouri, we did. In Texas, they did. They're trying to go through the courts and stop that. In Indiana, they were saved by the rhinos, it sounds like. So we'll talk more about both of those issues. Some great congressional testimony yesterday with Kristi Noem just chewing them up and spitting them out up there in the House. I loved watching that. We're going to play some of that for you in a few minutes as well. So, Ethan, right now, why don't we go ahead and hit a few of those top stories, please?
The Mark Cox Shortlist, presented by Rhino Shield.
Now you want to ask me a lot of questions about it, which I'm happy to answer, but I will just add there's a lot more scrutiny on this issue from this press corps than there was. Well, and the previous administration said that too. My predecessor stood up at this podium and she said inflation doesn't exist. She said the border was secure and people like you just took her at her word.
Thank you, Caroline Leavitt. Thank you for calling out a fake newser, Caitlin Collins from CNN, questioning the White House on what about inflation? What are you doing about inflation? Well, we know it was probably 21 or 22 or 25% under Joe Biden, and those people that carried water for Biden didn't say a word.
Republicans just blocked the Democrats' bill for a clean, simple extension of the ACA tax credits. The last chance they had to ensure people's premiums do not skyrocket in the coming months.
Yeah, people's premiums are going to skyrocket, Chucky boy, because of you. Because of you and your Democrat counterparts that forced Obamacare down the throats of Americans years ago, then added these fake subsidies during COVID that you knew would expire, and now people who got something for nothing are going to feel injured when those subsidies get taken away. It's all on the Democrats, but something tells me, thanks to the mainstream media, they won't take the blame for it.
The thing that is especially absurd about that is trying to, like, almost like, I want to be clear that Turning Point USA is my family. The Charlie Kirk Show is my family. You know, like she's just expanding the wings of people that we're not allowed to critique.
Yeah, Candace Owens there continues to dig a hole for herself. I don't understand the animosity. It almost seems to border on a jealousy of some sort. She's arguing that Erica Kirk and TPUSA have made hundreds of millions of dollars since Charlie Kirk's death, and somehow Candace seems injured that she's on the outside of all of that, and she's attacking Charlie Kirk's widow every day now.
Hoskins points to a recent federal court ruling saying the map will, quote, not be frozen unless and until the Secretary of State certifies the referendum. And that may not be until summer. He supports the new map, which is likely to send one more Republican to Washington, D.C.
Yep, that's some reporting out of Jeff City yesterday. The new redistricting map in Missouri has gone into effect, so it's now a 7-1 state. However, that could be temporary. We don't know. These jokesters, these outsiders who came in and bought signatures, turned them all in, and now they're being counted. Hopefully they go through each and every one of them by hand and make sure they were appropriately received.
Here's my question. In fact, I remember when I had gone with my family to Old St. Charles for Halloween, and I remember seeing people walking around there trying to get us to sign the petitions. So one of the requirements is that anyone who's asking you to sign the petition, they have to have the writing of it, right, in its entirety, for, yes, available for you to see there with, I guess, their clipboard. So would that then not negate some of the signatures? But how would they go back and prove that the person had that?
Well, I believe there was a parallel effort underway while these signatures were being collected. There were people with encouraged to videotape this happening and to go up and ask simple questions, not to confront, but to ask questions. I believe that evidence is being gathered, and I believe it's going to be presented in the form of a court challenge if indeed it's determined that they somehow managed to get enough votes to put this on the ballot. If they have 300,000, even if they threw out 100,000 or 110,000 of them, there would still be enough, it appears, if they collected them in the right places, to get this in front of voters in November. But if they gathered them illegally, that's a separate issue that could throw out tens of thousands of more of these signatures if they weren't gathered properly. And I only say that, part of that speculation on my part, I only say that because of the phone call I received from the RNC encouraging me, and they even sent me a piece of paper telling me what to look for and how to gather this information and forward it to them in the event that they needed to pose a legal challenge to what had happened here. So maybe there are more things going on to fight this in the background than we even know.
I hope so.
All right, I've run long in that segment. Sorry about that, Ethan. Let's get to our national anthem, please. Welcome back. I just received something in my email here that I was trying to get to, and I'm having some trouble. I apologize for getting back to you here. But I really wanted to report this morning. It was regarding the U.S. deficit. Now, of course, the debt is the national debt. That's what we owe to other countries. The deficit is the difference every year between what we bring in and how much we spend. And the odd thing about the number that I saw, just very strange, not quite sure how this happened, is that since Donald Trump got elected, it's been cut in half. Isn't that shocking?
That is shocking.
Now, that doesn't speak to affordability, right? But what it speaks to is DOGE. And the fact that we are, we put these tariffs on, and we've eliminated a lot of government waste, and we have started bringing in a lot of money for goods from overseas that nobody talks about. And it has effectively cut the deficit for the United States government roughly in half. Not the debt, not the $38 trillion, but we'll be working on that. But the point is, you can't keep adding at an increasing rate and ever affect the debt. But the deficit is something that we have been able to have an impact on. Now, here's another story that I thought might, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, it might just go along with that story. Listen to this headline. The U.S. trade deficit has now fallen to a five-year low as exports surge. Higher net exports are expected to add to solid fourth quarter gross domestic product growth.
And that's even with some of these countries claiming that they would not import goods from us.
China.
Yeah.
China. President Trump's tariffs helped shrink the U.S. trade deficit to its lowest monthly level in more than 5 years, according to data released from the Bureau of Economic Analysis. The U.S. goods and services trade deficit narrowed by 10.9% in September. But bear in mind, we still have a trade deficit, but we're working on it. Because now markets in Europe and a lot of other countries have access to U.S. goods that they didn't have before because tariffs have been lowered and restrictions have been removed thanks to the trade deals renegotiated by the Trump administration.
Well, don't expect to see that information, though, on NBC News or ABC or CNN.
You may not.
That's part of the problem, though, with this affordability thing that's going around where everyone's talking about that.
Yes.
And part of it's because you're not hearing these numbers. I'm not saying that makes it feel more affordable. I'm just saying he is making a difference. And the hope is that does trickle down and eventually make it more affordable for us on an everyday basis.
Thank you. I hope they tout this a little bit.
Right.
Exports increased in September by 3 percentage points to $289.3 billion, the second highest level on record, driven by shipments of non-monetary gold and pharmaceutical items. Imports ticked up by 0.6%. So all of this is evidence of what J.D. Vance and Donald Trump have been saying. In the meantime, you've got even Republicans out there mocking them on the affordability argument, which just means we're not making it effectively enough. You know, to your average moron around the water cooler today, telling them this news that I just reported to you, you're not going to change the mind of some progressive liberal who thinks that things are getting worse under Donald Trump. The point is, they're not, and it is... It's hard to turn around a tanker. Let's take that tanker we just took control of down in Venezuela. You can't turn one of those around on a dime. It takes a few miles to get a ship that big turned around. But we're working on it, and this data is more and more evidence of that. So that is good news this morning, no doubt about it. All right, back with Kim on a whim in just
Kim on a whim.
Here's a headline that'll make you feel good this morning, Mark. It says, in Minnesota, nearly every Somali household with children is on welfare. More than 8 in 10 households headed by Somali refugees in the state of Minnesota are on one or more forms of American taxpayer-funded welfare.
We're going to start referring to Minneapolis as Snogadishu. What do you think?
Snogadishu?
Absolutely. Like Mogadishu. Except they have a bunch of snow up there, and they've all moved to Minnesota.
That's why I couldn't live there.
Oh, my God.
Minneapolis is actually beautiful, but it's so cold in the winter.
Ugh.
Anyway, this is data that was published by the Center for Immigration Studies. But the data was based on 10 years where they were showing the differences, and here's what they found. It shows drastic disparities between native-born American households and Somali-born households in Minnesota, where nearly 80,000 residents have Somali ancestry compared to zero who had Somali ancestry back in 1990.
Yep.
They are flocking there. And I mentioned more than 8 in 10, but when you have children included, it jumps even more. And then it goes to 89% of Somali-headed households with children in Minnesota are on welfare. 86% on Medicaid, 62% of Somali households with children are on food stamps, 23% take cash welfare. Look, you and I believe agree on this, where we're all about a leg up. Sometimes, you know, you fall on hard times.
Right.
You need that extra bit, the crutch to kind of get you back to where you are, jumpstart you. It's not set up to be a forever leg up. We're not just going to support you indefinitely on food stamps or whatever else. You have to be making an effort to better yourself, to get off. That's the way the system was initially designed. And the problem with it is that there's been a lack of, I guess, checks and balances, whatever you want to call it, where it's become, that is someone's income. Not temporarily, more or less forever.
Oh, you got to get a check. Absolutely. And you know, that's not unique to... That is not unique to that community, I'll say.
Right.
that there are plenty of people who are lower income across America whose primary goal growing up is to figure out how to get a check the way mom and dad do. We've caused this. We've created this monster where people grow up seeing what mom and dad do and decide that's what they're going to do. They just need to get on assistance of some sort, and then they'll just continue to subsist the way they do now.
But how many other countries would offer this much assistance? Because a lot of these people know if they can get to the United States, they can get on this assistance. And you would argue, well, of course, you'd have to be a U.S. citizen, right, in order to get it. But nowadays, you can get driver's license and you can vote and do all sorts of things without being a United States citizen. So I wouldn't put it past anybody for figuring out a way to get on the welfare system, even though you're not legally here in the United States.
Agree.
Listen, I think you played this clip, but I wanted to play again, Donald Trump talking about what's going on in Minnesota.
These are people that work. These are people that say, let's go. Come on, let's make this place great. These are people that do nothing but complain. They complain. And from where they came from, they got nothing. You know, they came from paradise and they said, this isn't paradise. But when they come from hell and they complain and do nothing but, we don't want them in our country. Let them go back to where they came from and fix it.
Well, you know, if people want to come here, I feel the same way about people who were born in the United States and are blessed to be citizens, and they just complain about how terrible it is and how we're all racist. It's defending the system. Right. We need to just break down everything that we've ever done and the foundation of this country. You know what? Why don't you go over there? Enjoy. Have fun. Bon voyage.
To your point here about how bad it is, if you listen to the spin when this story first broke, and you listen to the spokespeople for Ilhan Omar, and they talk about all the contributions this community makes and why they're an asset to America, it's a lie. And it's a lie that was exposed by Joe Borelli, who's a Republican who is occasionally invited on CNN along with Scott Jennings. He talked about this earlier this week. Listen.
In the rush to defend sort of the Somalis in the wake of the scandal about the fraud, right? There were some people out there saying the Somalis contribute $67 million in taxes to the state of Minnesota, right? And you look at that in the big context, that actually averages out to about $1,000 in state and local taxes, which is an eighth of what Minnesotans pay. Minnesotans pay about $8,000 per person in taxes. Then you look at the social programs, right? 47% of the Somali people here in Minnesota were on some type of social welfare program.
Yeah, well, but apparently it's a lot more. According to Breitbart, he said what, 47%?
He said 47% of adults.
This says about 81% of households.
Households.
So right. Maybe that's the right. And then when you have children involved, they're saying 89%. That's huge. This is such a problem, and it's not just the Somali people. It's just people who are taking advantage of our system and creating all of these issues that we now are having to deal with.
We have adopted the problems of foreign countries. Mm-hmm. They starve. They are in forever poverty because they never produce anything. And then on subsistence, they overpopulate, and then they can't take care of the kids that are born. So the Somali problem is not that different from other immigration problems. Now, they come to this country and get a handout. There's no significant reason for them to improve. Some do. I'm sure there are exceptions to that rule. That's not 100% of people who are like that. But if the largest majority of that crowd is, what do you do about that? I remember going to New York City a few years ago and went out and visited Ellis Island and read the stories of how they used to process immigrants when they came to this country legally. And there was a question on there. Can you support yourself? And if not, are you here to live with a relative who can help you support yourself until you can get a job and get on your feet?
Because otherwise, you're a leech.
If your answer is no, go get back on the boat and we're shipping you back to wherever the hell you came from. When did that attitude change?
Mm-hmm. It's a mindset shift, though, in general. The culture in general doesn't want to work because they know they can get a handout. Even the system with families, like if you have a dad in the picture for a mom and her kids and they need assistance, their odds of getting help increase when the dad's no longer in the picture. So what is that? What does that then encourage? It encourages fatherless homes. Well, we know what that leads to, because when the father's not in the home, the kids are much more likely to be involved in violent activities. I mean, all sorts of things.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've seen such evidence of this, and it becomes a gluttonous beast, which is why I play that bite all the time about, you know, government. But it's true. And these programs do exactly what the left in this country wants to do. It wants to get more and more people, completely reliant on the federal government. And then the minute you start to propose a modest scale back in the growth of a program, the Democrats will accuse you of starving people and ruining their lives and making old people eat dog food. And I mean, it's the same story from the same playbook every time. It doesn't matter who the group is. That's the argument the left uses to continue to try to grow the size of government. The numbers we told you earlier about the trade deficits going down and all of that, I don't know how we bring self-reliance back, but you've got to get people back in that mindset. And it's going to be a horrible cycle to break. It's going to be painful, is what it is. And the left knows that, and they've used it to their full advantage to brainwash these people. It's sad. It depresses me for what this country is going to look like 100 years from now, when my great grandchildren and great great grandchildren, God bless them, are trying to make their way through the world. They're going to have to deal with this horrible situation we've allowed to be developed in our country when it comes to these social programs. They're never going to get smaller.
There has to be a better system of checks and balances. That is the solution, where maybe this is already set in motion, but it's clearly not being enforced, where you have to have regular check-ins, and you have to prove, not just with your words, actual documentation somehow, pay stubs, something where you can show that you are making an effort. Because that's part of the problem is, remember, where if you're on unemployment and you can show that you applied for a job.
Yeah, that was enough.
Check. And that's what employers were saying, is how many people would apply for a job. They'd get offered an interview and they'd no show, or they'd accept the job and they would never show up, or maybe go one day and they're like, all right, I'm done. And just not even ever say anything like, hey, I'm done. So they were able to take advantage of the system by doing that, and that's the problem. You should have to sustain employment, and if you can't, that's on you. That is not the government's problem. That's not my problem as a taxpayer, that I have to then fund you. I'm sorry. I'll happily give you a leg up. I want to make sure that everyone has an opportunity to be successful, but if you're not willing to do it yourself, that's not on me.
We've tipped the balance in this country, unfortunately. I had a friend who worked in the hotel business. Doesn't anymore, got out of that business, but worked in the hotel business and related the story to me that he set a new record, that in 1 week he had 34 or 35 no-shows for job interviews.
People had
set up the job interview. All they wanted was the confirmation email. They forwarded that to the to Social Security or whoever was giving them their benefits, and that's all they needed to show that they were, or unemployment, to show that they were trying.
Then they just didn't show up because
they didn't want a job.
Is just overwhelmed and they don't have the resources to go, I assume, and verify that every person's actually
working? Hell no, they
working.
Don't have the resources.
So I guess that's the problem, too. Well, how do we fix that?
You change the requirements is what you change. Physically bring me a pay stub, and then I'll know you're employed.
But you have to do it multiple pay stubs. Anyone can work 2 weeks.
Prove to me every 3 months that you've got continued
employment. You sustained
employment.
It, correct.
Yeah. All right. Good. That's a good one, Kim. We got to talk about this crazy situation with this football coach from Michigan. This thing has taken on a whole new angle this morning that I did not see coming at all. We'll talk about that when we get back.
Police say this guy had a meltdown. He grabbed a knife, got in the car, and showed up at that woman's house. So She called 911. Until this week, Sherrone Moore was one of the biggest names in college football. Everybody knew him. It looked like he had it all together, but it looks like he might have traded his $13 million salary for time behind bars after the University of Michigan fired him for having a, quote, inappropriate relationship with his executive assistant, who reportedly got a huge raise. So Moore has a wife, he has three kids at home, and was reportedly suicidal after he lost his coaching job. He didn't know what he was going to do. People in the college sports world say that he was acting like pretty strange, though. He'd berated his assistants recently and was really on edge before they just axed him.
Yeah, this is the football, the former head football coach of the University of Michigan. I mean, imagine that. These are coaches. This guy made $13 million a year. How much is Drink making? Like five or six? Is it more than that now?
He just got an extension,
whatever it is. I don't know. I mean, it's crazy money for a head football coach at a university. Five, six, eight, $9 million, $12 million. This guy's making $13 million a year. What does that even average out to divided by the number of games? Now, they had a pretty good season at Michigan. They didn't play for the Big Ten championship or anything like that. They beat Ohio State, I think, last year. They didn't beat him this year. But he had the world by the you-know-what. He did. He did. He had it right by the old gonads there. He was in the catbird seat. And I'm sure the NFL was going to come calling at some point, maybe offering him millions more to come and coach in the NFL.
And he's only 39 years old, too.
And he's got a beautiful wife and a family. I mean, it's what kind of mental breakdown happens with somebody like that. And clearly, I'm not making excuses for him, but I think it clearly has to be some sort of a mental breakdown. They said, according to the school, that he had been stalking this girl for 4 weeks. Maybe she tried to break up with him or stop seeing him on the side. And according to complaints at the university, he was stalking her. And maybe that's when she sought help. I don't know.
So I assume he was the one who had hired this executive assistant.
Yes. Paid her a lot more money than anybody else on the staff in sort of equal jobs. People that had caught some people's attention too, that suddenly she got a huge pay raise compared to everybody else.
He made a mistake by hiring someone who's attractive. I'm sorry. You have to be so you do. You have to be careful these days when you are that close to somebody.
Saying he shouldn't have hired her if he was already in a relationship with her. What I'm saying is the relationship happened after she was already on staff. Then he promoted her.
Right.
And then he doubled her salary or something crazy like that.
I know the timeline of all that. I still stand by that. I still think it was risky when you're working that closely with someone.
Kim's advocating for hiring ugly people.
I think that's what she's advocating.
We are all broken people, and this just speaks to how broken we are.
No.
There is temptation there.
No. You be a man.
I'm not excusing it.
Be the master of your domain. Seinfeld.
I agree with that, but there is something to be said. Like, people who get criticized for not getting lunch or not riding in a car with somebody who's not their spouse of the opposite sex. And people think that's crazy.
Oh, the Mike Pence.
But other people do that. Mike Pence. There are other people who do that. And they make fun of him for that. But I advocate for that. I totally get why that's a thing.
To just remove the temptation altogether?
Yes, to remove the temptation.
Just controlling yourself?
Yes, controlling yourself. But that it's kind of like where I talk about women in the way that they dress, okay? I can sit here and tell men, hey, you shouldn't look at me. If I want to wear a really, really low-cut shirt and have everything out there for people to see, you should just be able to avert your eyes, okay? Men as visual people, that's ridiculous for me to sit there and tell you guys, oh, you can't look or you can't say this about me, but because I'm the one who's wearing that. I'm not blaming the girl. I'm not blaming her because she's attractive. I'm just saying that you put yourself in this tricky position where there is naturally going to be temptation. Men are visual, and
men are men. Men have testosterone. There's a difference through their veins.
Exactly.
You can read a billboard, but not buy the product.
I agree. I'm not saying it's justified what he did. I'm just saying you do have to be careful in these situations.
And here's why this is the biggest reason I'm disagreeing with you on this. This guy had problems. Affairs happen every day. I understand that. I've seen it for years. I mean, I've worked in a business in television news where there are a lot of pretty people, a lot of attractive people. And I've seen people fall victim to this over the years. But as a man, you have the ability to control it just like the woman does. And yes, people can flirt and all that stuff. At the end of the day, you have a decision to make. You're either, you can't walk away and say, well, the devil made me do it because she was in a tight skirt the other day and I couldn't control myself. Yes, you can. You can control yourself. And I'm not putting myself up on a pedestal, but I have been in the business for 35 years around a lot of beautiful women who were reporters and co-anchors and all of that stuff. And I never did any of that. You don't need to do that. If you're in a committed marriage now, if you're a single person, that's a different story. I don't think you can make the excuse that I just don't think that's a good excuse. He was the only person responsible for his actions here. That girl, he could have rebuffed her advances if that's the direction it went. My guess is he's some sort of a predator who went after her. And there are clearly some mental issues there. I don't know what clicked in his life, but he decided that the grass was greener on the other side.
No, I'm not, trust me, I'm not making an excuse for him. I just think you got to be, you remove yourself from the temptation of it. That's my point.
I guess. I just say you be a man and you make the right choices in your life. And this guy is way off the road. Now he's in jail for threatening her with a knife and threatening to hurt himself. I mean, wow, that must be the quickest fall from glory we've seen in a long time in this country. All right, coming up, we got check of business for you. A little later, we'll get to JJ Carafano. Stay tuned.
Get more at 971talk.com.